God. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, it is dead air on this Halloween weekend. This the night before All Hallows Eve, and then we'll get together back on All Hallows Eve. It's my favorite time of year. I look forward to having you with us tonight. Let me just set the stage for how you can be involved. Some folks have already been involved by sending in their stories in on social media and by actually calling and recording a message on our spook line during the week. And so we've got some of those ready to go. I'm looking forward to those. Those are really, really good stories that can open up an endless possibility of conversations. And of course, our number, especially on a night like tonight and on a night like tomorrow night. You know what kind of night I'm talking about. Here's the number. You'll need it. It's 855-790-8255, toll-free in North America. That's 855-790-TALK. Outside North America, 503-506-0396. And on Skype, you can get through at ITP51. It's one of those nights. We can already feel it here in my neck of the woods. I never thought I'd be one of those people saying neck of the woods, but here I am. Nonetheless, in the past 8 hours or so, the wind has just started to kick up. It's a howling out there. As they say, you got to batten down the hatches because stuff's literally going flying, and you're just hearing the clank here and the bang there, and it's just a sign. It's a sign that we are in the season where it becomes, I guess, acceptable to talk about this stuff. I know many people would just like me to do these kinds of shows all year long. And, of course, there's so much brewing that we've actually put on the back burner, believe it or not, to do these programs. It seems to be that more people are believing in the possibility that there is this veil that some can pierce. And that's how we have this interaction with entities, and the list goes on. And tonight on the program, amongst your calls at the number and the Skype that I've given out, those who have already joined us in the program, the comments that will be coming in on the social media channels throughout the program tonight, along with guests who we've got joining us as well, and the cherry on the cake for me, is Daniel Brewer, who is here, our paranormal news correspondent, who will be putting on his Halloween costume and turning down the lights real low and opening up a book for us and telling us some stories tonight. So don't go far. As we move on into dead air here tonight on the program, I want to welcome here up first Cleet Keith. And he has written a book based on the experiences that he had at the historic Greystone Estate, which is sitting atop 18 acres in the city of Beverly Hills. It may offer spectacular panoramic views and keen insight into the rich history of the area, but there have been visitors, much like himself, who have experienced much more in paranormal activity. Now, he never had thoughts of writing a book, let alone one on the paranormal, and was certainly not one who was totally convinced in the existence of ghosts or spiritual hauntings or whatever you want to call them until he started working at the property, the Greystone Mansion in Beverly Hills, California. He's compiled eyewitness accounts to detail supernatural activities and historical narratives connected to the estate there, known as Greystone Mansion, most popularly. Not only is it just a collection of ghost stories, but it's really a telling of people who have lived through it, eyewitness accounts. In fact, he's got more than 200 stories and more than 80 people who have come on the record, so to speak, and basically said that they had weird and strange activity happen. And that's what I want to hear about tonight and tomorrow night here on Dead Air, is those kinds of encounters. Let's go ahead and welcome him. Cleet Keith, welcome to Into the Paranormal here on our Dead Air this Halloween weekend. How are you?
I'm just great. Thanks for having me, Jeremy.
I'm interested in your perspective on this topic that brings us together on a night like this. You never had an interest of this, and is it safe to say that you didn't expect you would have these experiences when you agreed to live on the property, that being the mansion in which we've discussed, the Greystone Mansion?
Yeah, definitely fair to say. When I started working there, which was in 1998, I had no idea of the background, the history of this house, that there was a murder-suicide in 1929, that people had killed themselves within the home, the mansion. There were, you know, several maids that committed suicide within the home. When I was working there in 2003, when I was working there, a man was on the property and blew half his head off in 2003. All these things, I think, play into the fact that it's extremely haunted, but I had zero clue when I started working there at all.
But then you started to hear from what people who had stayed there previous to you, that sort of thing?
Yeah, what happened was the first thing that took place was when I started working there, they were shooting a Sprite commercial up inside the mansion. They told me, if you want to go up and see how they're shooting up there, go on up. I said, great. So I went up there, and as I was approaching the West Courtyard, this guy ran out of the front of the mansion screaming, F this place, F this, and ran off and was never seen again. And I went to the senior ranger, Steve Clark, at that time, and I said, well, what just happened? And they were disrespecting that home so much, the crew, when they were shooting the commercial, drilling into the wood, dropping things on the marble floor, disrespecting the home. And I think the spirits had enough. And this guy was upstairs wrapping up cable, putting it into a crate. And he threw it down into the crate and reached over for another crate. And the crate that he just threw the cable in went across the room by itself in front of him. And he snapped. He just freaked out, ran out of the house and said, F this place, I'll never come back. And that's when I went, well, I guess, is this? And I talked to him, said, is this place haunted? He goes, I don't know. He just started working as well. And then it went from there. Then it kept happening and happening.
And then at one point, you had one of those experiences yourself, right?
Yeah, I at one point during my time there, and I actually worked there. I didn't live there. I worked there. I came there every day. It was my office, basically, on that property. And Steve, Ranger Steve, was down below in the basement, which is beyond creepy. It is really a horrifying place. And he was down there giving my sister and her husband, who had come into town, giving them a tour of the house. They'd never seen it. And so I joined them down in the basement. And as I was standing there, and it was dark, and Steve's talking, suddenly there were three loud slams on a wall right next to me. Now, I looked. There was nobody there. And I just looked at Steve and said, come on, man, what was that? And he's like, I don't know. I go, come on. Are you setting this up because my sister's here? And he said, no. And I had him call this other ranger that I knew, and he was in another park. And I couldn't believe it. It was frightening, really frightening. So yeah, I actually had that happen to me.
Okay. And so do you find it overwhelming, the amount of activity that has happened at this property? Can you give the audience a sense of maybe how far this goes back and what kinds of stuff we're talking about?
Yeah, I'll skip all the background history of the mansion, how it became. But what I will tell you is they started the building of the mansion on February 15th, 1927. And if you think about it, by September 1928, now look how long that is, February 27th. To September 28, the family was able to move into this 55,000 square foot home, 67 rooms altogether. It's actually 46,000 square foot home with 55 rooms, 67 altogether. Huge, huge mansion. They were able to move in. That was in September. By February 16th of 1929, 4 months later, Ned, the father of the family that moved in there, was dead in the house. And his male secretary, Hugh, was lying right outside the door of that same room in a murder-suicide. So that began the stories that took place. What caused that is up to speculation. There's a bunch of different thoughts of why they had a murder-suicide, but that wasn't the end of it. Like I said earlier, there were maids that one maid slit her wrist, another one hung herself, and a little girl, they say, fell out a window, but having done research and talking to people, it sounds like she may have fallen off a roof there, and she's still there. I communicated with her. Ned and Hugh, who had the murder-suicide, they're still in the home. I communicated with them. And that's just the people there that we know about. There are others that I'm sure have passed as well. And there's a demon within the home. We know that. We had Chris Fleming. I don't know if you know who he is, but he's a well-known psychic who came, and we had a freaky communication with that. So it goes on and on. Like you said, Jeremy, 83 people I interviewed, didn't think I was going to write a book, but it kept happening more. Go talk to him. Go talk to her. 83 people. I had over 300 stories at one point. And the publisher called and said, it's a 700-page book. You can't do this. We went, oh, my God. So we got rid of like 50-some stories.
So this is the best of the best.
Yeah.
Do you think that the murder-suicide caused some of this activity, or at least contributed to it?
Well, I believe that the murder-suicide of that night opened a portal within the home. And the portal, for those who don't know, it's like a highway for spirits to come and go. And I think the aggression, the anger, the gunshots, and by the way, I have recordings, many, many recordings of gunshots within the home. I'd leave my recorder, and these gunshots are really loud, huge gunshots that echo. So it must be in the home because I'm hearing an echo within the home. And so I know that there is crazy activity going on inside. And in speaking with the people that work there, when I first got there, a lot of people denied it and didn't want to talk about it until it became something that it was so, even all the public knew about it. They'd read about Hugh and Ned having killed themselves within the home. So everybody became aware of it. Everybody knew that the place is haunted. They come up, when I was working there, they'd come up to me and they have two questions. They wouldn't say like, is this, what about the architecture? Is it 18th century Gothic? No, they would come up and say, is this place haunted? And then where are the restrooms? Those are the two questions that they would say to me and go inside. If I took them inside, and I had some things happen with these people sometimes, being touched and voices and all that stuff when I brought them in.
Okay. So you mentioned you leave your recorder out all night, then you review it. Things happen. Did anybody hear the gunshots at the time? Or was this something that you realized after the fact? Either way, it's still creepy that gunshots are going off in the home or around the home, and you still can't track down the source.
Right, right. So obviously there were gunshots the night of the murders. So I believe, now this house is poured concrete. It was done by a guy named Frank Kaufman, who did the Times Building, LA Times Building downtown, also Hoover Dam. And so he was a concrete guy. He poured concrete for this home and then faced it with Indiana limestone. And limestone, we know in the paranormal realm, is a conductor of energy. Stephen King wrote The Shining at the Stanley Hotel, which is built on top of limestone, and it's extremely haunted. Same with Greystone. I believe the night of the murders, murder-suicide, that it was so horrible, the things that took place with shooting each other in the head or shooting one in the head and killing themselves in the head, that is imprinted in the fabric, in the walls of this home. And so on a random night, I'll leave the recorder and I will get gunshots coming off. I believe they're gunshots from that night. And there was one guy I interviewed for the book who was a porter who would clean the place. And man, I remember the day he came to me, he was white as a sheet. And he said, I just heard gunshots going off in there. Now, I've never heard. I was there 22 years. I have a lot of friends who are still there. They haven't heard gunshots, but this guy came to me and said, what is that about? And I said, well, that's how they were killed within the home.
And we have some examples of those. You have provided two examples to us. One of these, it looks like, was captured in 2015 and another in 2018. Maybe we'll just play them here for the audience. I have not heard these myself. And then we can provide some background if warranted. So here we go. Clear as day. That was one of them. Here's the other one. You would think if that actually was happening with people present that someone would notice.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And my being in there a lot over 22 years, I would have thought I would have heard something like that. Now, I was there at night. I was there till 3 a.m. I was doing all those things and doing some investigations and things with other rangers. And we never heard anything like that. We maybe heard voices and things, all that. And sometimes, a lot of times, voices that we never heard that ended up on recorders having been left there overnight. I can't tell you how many times, hundreds of times. So yeah, I mean, they're Jeremy, I even left the recorder in one night and had the voice of a little girl off in the distance. And then suddenly this other voice would like overcome that voice. So it was like, then you're, and it became this horrifying voice screaming, and which eventually Chris Fleming, who showed up and became a friend, and I took him through the house, and he pointed out, he said, you've got a demon in here. And he goes, and I never say that, but you have a demon in here. And he goes between the attic and the basement.
Okay.
And we actually got a recording of that. Yeah.
So you conducted investigations of some kind on this property often. Is that correct?
Yeah, I did them by myself a lot, but with some friends that worked for the city, usually, because there was others that had interest in the paranormal, like getting recordings and things, not really going too far with it because it scared a lot of people. And this place is, again, it's 46,000 square feet, and at night it's frightening. And we know there are spirits in there. We know it. So you're in their atmosphere, and they'll let you know that they're there. So a lot of people didn't want to do it, but I did get some friends, and we would go in there with the spirit box. We go in with, you know, dowsing rods. We go in with recorders and all those and the REM pods and everything, and set them up and see what we could capture. And many, many times we captured a lot.
Let's hear two of those examples here. But one of them is Ned. The other one's Hugh. Do they need any background, Cleet?
Well, when you hear Ned, I took the spirit box, and I was with my friend Dan, who's a senior ranger, and I said, let's just go in to the living room at night. It was 11 o'clock at night, dark. Let's go in there and try this thing, because I don't really think it works, but let's just try it. So I went in there, and I said, if there's anybody in here with us, could you come to this red light and let me know who you are? Is there anybody in here with us? And then you'll hear the voice say Ned.
All right, audience, you be the judge.
What's your name? What's your name?
Now, do we know who Ned is?
Ned was the father of the children and the husband of the wife that moved into that home. It was his house that was built. So he moved in with his family, and then 4 months later had the argument with Hugh, which is the next recording. And Hugh was the one that was also shot and killed. And so after I finished that, I asked, is there anybody else? Ned, would you do that again? And then in a different voice, I heard Hugh.
Is that you, Ned? you, Ned?
Now, if these were just random names, that would be one thing here, but these were actually verifiable names that we could trace back to events that happened or people who frequented the property, right?
Absolutely. I know those are the guys. And not only do, I don't know how that sounded out over the air, but it's really pretty crystal clear. And along with the fact that he has been seen, Hugh has not, but well, maybe he has actually, but Ned has been seen by several different people. One was a ranger that was cleaning the windows and looked inside the house, and he was standing right in front of her. And when I took her through the house to do the to write her chapter and about things that happened to her, she said, well, this guy was standing here. He was in like a smoking jacket and he had a mustache. And she didn't know that I had the murder photos. So I pulled the murder photo up and I said, did he look like this? And she looked at it and went, oh, my God, because he's actually in the murder photo. He's in a smoking jacket.
Wait, Keith is my guest. Dead Air, night one on Into the Parabnormal. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Parabnormal News. I'm Brad Bernards. In December last year, the media reported an intriguing signal the Breakthrough Listen Project found in their radio telescope data, according to theconversation.com. The signal didn't appear to be the result of any recognizable astrophysical activity or any familiar Earth-based interference. Shane Smith, an intern at the Berkeley SETI Research Center, tells us what's unique about this signal.
This one had stuck out to me because it fit all of our criteria when we're looking for a signal. It was only present in our on observations as we looked towards the source, and then it was not present in any of the off observations.
When you're searching for signs of extraterrestrial life, you want to be very careful about getting it right before you make any announcements. Sophia Sheik, postdoctoral researcher at UC Berkeley, says one thing is for sure.
For now, all we can say for sure is it's two different Earth-bound transmitters mixing with each other. So, definitely not aliens.
Their results are reported in two papers in Nature Astronomy. A Dunlap Institute astronomer has discovered that our solar system may be surrounded by what she describes as a magnetic tunnel that can be seen in radio waves, the University of Toronto reports. Dr. Jennifer West, research associate at the Dunlap Institute for Astronomy and Astrophysics, is making a scientific case that two bright structures that are seen on opposite sides of the sky, previously considered to be separate, are actually connected and are made of rope-like filaments. This connection forms what looks like a tunnel around our solar system. West and her colleagues believe they are the first astronomers to connect them as a unit. Somewhere between abnormal and paranormal, I'm Brad Bernards, Parabnormal News.
October 13th, 1905, the quite intriguing and very famous stage actor Sir Henry Irving was performing once again, this time as Archbishop in the popular play Beckett, as his manager, Bram Stoker, watched on from a distance, when Irving suddenly suffered a devastating stroke midway through the production of Thomas Becket's dramatic assassination in 1170, which Henry II of England had planned out after a conflict between the two. Sir Henry was immediately taken from the stage and later passed away in the beautiful hotel lobby after being moved there in an attempt to get the doomed actor any type of help. According to mysteriousuniverse.org, since his sudden passing, the people at the Midland Hotel in Bradford, England, have reported sporadic and somewhat spooky sightings that have happened and are still happening to this very day. Several guests have seen the ghostly silhouette in the hotel room he last stayed in, prior to the Theatre Royale being taken down in 1989. Henry's spirit has been lurking even more so around the area. The Midland Hotel, however, was clearly haunted. After the encounters and thorough scaring of the guests, ghost hunter Kenny Charles was brought in for a vivid investigation. He then captured a strong presence of a spirit by using his device called a Melmeter. Intrigued, yet very freaked out, Charles confided in a medium. By connecting with the entity, she told Kenny, if you cheer and clap, Irving's ghost will appear. He then returned back to the hotel for one last investigation. This time, he used laser wire and began to cheer, clap, and call upon the spirit of Henry to show itself. The lights began to flicker, and in the corridor, Sir Henry Irving started to materialize, and Kenny then snapped a quick picture of the eerie form. From looking at the photo, he was truly convinced it was the performer. The Midland Hotel was built in 1890, and there has been a huge amount of paranormal activity on almost a weekly basis. Sir Henry Irving has obviously refused to move on after more than a century since passing. This is Daniel Brewer, into the paranormal, Dead Air.
The freaks come out at night on Into the Paranormal, where vampires are highly encouraged. Dead Air. Dead Air. Dead Air.
Dead Air. Dead Air. Dead Air. I'm Jeremy Scott, 855-790-8255. That's 855-790-TALK, 503-506-0396. Outside North America and on Skype at ITP51, we've been talking about a property in Beverly Hills, California, the Greystone Mansion. And the author of the book, Ghosts of Greystone, Beverly Hills, is Cleet Keith, and he's with me talking about some of this haunted history of the property. We've been also playing some of these sounds of seemingly, intelligent interactions, I must say, Cleet, with some of these spirits that reside there.
Yeah, we've had moments where we've actually had people show up and not setting traps, however, but leaving situations where they would put a recorder or sitting inside the house at night and hearing movement and voices. This one person said that who worked there, who was a ranger, said that she heard what sounded like a party taking place downstairs. She was upstairs and she was like, the place is closed. How is that even possible? And she went downstairs. There was nobody there. The same thing happened for one of the rangers. We had an evening with the Prince and Princess of Monaco. And it was a long night. Everybody left except this one ranger to close up. And it was like right around 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock at night. And he had forgotten his lunch pail and parked outside, ran back in. And when he ran back in, he heard two guys talking to each other, like just conversation. And the house was closed, everything. And he's like, how is it? I have somebody. He went back, got his radio, came back in the house. And now this one guy was singing. And he said it was singing like old 1920 songs. And he's going like, I've got somebody in this house. He called the police. Police showed up. They went through the house with him and said, yeah, are you serious? This is what I heard. You've got nobody in this house. So things like that will happen. Random times. You never know when, but they actually do happen.
Are there people that come in and do filming and investigations as well? And if the answer to that is yes, how do these spirits usually react to that?
Well, that's a great question, because filming has been a problem. Because, like I said earlier, that people will come in and they used to, a long time ago, just treat the place horribly. And the spirits didn't like it, to the point where one of the people that I interviewed that used to be a ranger, she said that she would go to, you'd have a huge crew that would do a walkthrough and they do a scout. And they would go to the house and the property and say, here's where we're going to do this. Here's where we'll do that inside the house. And she said, you have to tell me everything you're going to do. So they finished. And when they started shooting, they started changing their plans without telling her. And so they would paint a wall a different color, or they would put up a rug and nail it into the wall. And she'd walk in and go, oh my, what did you do? And well, the wall was empty, so we had to put something up there. And she said, you didn't say that on the walkthrough. And he goes, well, okay, we're telling you now. And she goes, no, it doesn't work that way. Ned will be irate. And he goes, who is Ned, your boss? Well, no, but he'll be up. Well, if he's, let me talk to him. I'll talk to him. She goes, well, you can't talk to him. He's a spirit. And they're going like, oh my God, that company that put that rug up in the wall had three, not one, not two, three generators. These are huge truck generators shut down that day. And she went to him and said, what did I tell you? And they were just like, this has never happened before. So if you go in there with the idea of doing what you want to do and not letting Ned know what's happening, he'll stop it. He'll end everything. Many times when they shoot or we have design shows or any kind of events that were taking place there, we would always leave recorders in there afterwards. Like there's National Treasure 2 was a huge one where they left the recorder on all night purposely. Peter Devlin is his name, and he left it on all night because he loves the sounds of creaking homes. He can maybe use it later on somewhere. And when he left that on, what he caught that night was astounding. And it took place at 12:58 at night, and it sounds like cases, like camera cases being shoved over. It's incredible. It's absolutely crazy.
And there's a reason I don't play these ahead of time, because I want to be I want to hear it for the first time, just like the audience is. I do know that this next one here, though, was taken from the kitchen.
So what you want to do, Stan? Well, I got to tell you, man, I felt like there was some wind or air coming through the kitchen, cold air.
What was that? No, it's just now. Like a hello? Was that you?
No. What's it going to be on the recorder? Is there anybody here with us?
Okay, so what happened on that one is, if you listen to it again, as we're coming in, and I'm in that clip, as we're coming in and talking, there is a voice that says, hello, and it echoes because we're in a kitchen that's empty, and you'll hear it clear as day say, hello, and then the one guy says, did you hear that? And I go, hear what? Somebody just said hello, and I said, no, I have my recorder going. Maybe it's on the recorder. So that's what's happening.
Interesting. All right. And it looks like we have one or two more of these that I want to play for the audience here. So we'll go ahead and do that here. I know the audience really likes to hear this kind of stuff, and this is kind of the time of the year to do it. So here we go.
If I get teary-eyed, it's just the energy.
I get teary-eyed talking about the energy. So somebody who's not having a good time in the mansion at that point in time, and a spirit responded back with something to the lines of don't, or
exactly. So if you listen to it again, you'll hear it. She'll say, I apologize. If I get teary eyed, you'll hear don't. And we did not hear that in this conversation I was having with her. That was when I did the transcription. I heard that voice and went, oh my God, they're trying to connect with her right there.
All right, here we go. One more time.
If I get teary eyed, it's just the energy.
Well, if that was a response to what she was talking about in the moment, that was darn quick.
Well, there's nobody else there. It's just she and myself. So she's talking to me. Yeah, so it had to be a
response that came like lightning quick.
Yep.
All right. And we have one more of these. Here we go.
Open the panel. Put the...
I believe this thing is telling you to get out. Let's hear that one more time.
Put the...
All right. I heard get out. So is the story behind that? Did you feel threatened and did you get out?
So what that was, I took what this a friend of mine, his name is Chan, Ranger Chan. I took him up into the attic because he had an incident that took place there that scared him. And I said, let's go back up there and talk about it. And let's have you do what you did that scared you so I could see what we're talking about when I put it in the book. And so when we went up there, he says, so I took the panel and I, whatever his comment is, and you'll hear quietly, it says, go ahead, get out. And again, that's another one, Jeremy, where we didn't hear it. It was only after I did the transcription and started writing it up, I went, who's that other voice in there?
Yeah, it's important to make that distinction that there were no other people around, that you didn't hear this at that time. Does it give you any sort of feeling when you hear it after the fact?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what was and the other one that we played earlier where she says don't. Those things, what I would do is I take that and even the hello that was in the kitchen, I would take those clips and I would send it to the people that were in the room with me and say, is this you? Knowing it wasn't. But they all come back saying, no, what the hell is that? And that's what I would say. Well, it wasn't any of us. It's got to be someone else in there that was with us at that time.
All right. So, Khalid, you worked in the property for the city of Beverly Hills, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And there are other people who told of stories as well. Is there one who had some events happen down by the stables?
Yeah, there's a guy, and he's still working for the city, and I'll just say his name is David. And David came to me. Actually, I saw him one time. We were at the credit union. I was writing the book, and I saw him. I said, hey, man, how you doing? He goes, good, good. I said, well, you know, I'd known him for like 15 years. I said, hey, David, I've never asked you if you had anything that took place up at Greystone. And he looked at me and just went, you know, I don't go. I said, wait. Did you have something happen? He goes, I don't really want to talk about it. I said, come on, man. That's why I'm here. I want to talk to you about it. And it'll take a couple minutes and that'll be that. He said, I've never told anybody. I said, exactly. So it took 17 minutes. We went out in the parking lot and he started telling me that one of David's jobs at that time was to, on Rodeo Drive, famous road in Beverly Hills, they would, at Christmas time, over one night period, they would take out all the flowers that are in the middle of the medium on that road and replace them all with poinsettias. So it was like a 24-hour job. Yank them all out and then put them all back in the morning so when people showed up, they're all poinsettias. So he had worked all day yanking the flowers out, and it was 2:30 at night, and he said he went up to Greystone, where a trailer is in the back down by the stables, and he said, I just wanted to go in there, close my eyes at 2:30, knowing that I have another crew coming in at 4:30, and I would start back in. Just give me a couple hours. And so he came into the property, and again, it's very creepy on that property. And he went into his trailer. It was like, it's like a, like an on-site office trailer. Went inside the front door, then went into his office door and opened that up, sat by his computer and closed his eyes. And he shut the computer off, just closed his eyes. And he said, when he closed his eyes, suddenly there were three knocks on the front door of the trailer. So he's like, who would that be? It's 2:30 at night. It's dark as hell out there. There's nobody supposed to be on the property. And I've just heard two knocks on the front door. So he comes out of his office door, goes up to the front trailer door, which is painted, the glass is painted black so you can't look in. And he's like trying to listen. And he's thinking, well, maybe it was a deer, because we get deer up there sometimes. And so I said to him, a deer knocking on your door? And he goes, no, it wasn't a deer. Okay. I said, well, then what happened? And he said, as he stood there, he looked out and he saw a glow. He had little mini blinds and he saw a glow from behind the mini blinds coming in. And he's like, what the heck is that? So he goes over to the mini blinds and he cracks the mini blinds open. And he says, Cleet, I'm going to tell you what I saw. I go, oh, okay. I didn't want to push him. I didn't want to rush him. Just go ahead. And I just let him talk. And he said, you're going to think I'm crazy. I said, you should hear the stories I have in this book. I won't think you're crazy. And he said, about 10 feet away from where he was outside his office window, he said, I saw a stagecoach. And I'm like, okay. He said it was a stagecoach that had four like lamp type features on each corner. He said the moon that was hitting it, I could see the side of the wood. It looked like old barn wood. And he said, I could literally see the creases within the wood. And then the reins from the stagecoach led out to one horse. And it was on that horse. Nobody on the coach, just the horse and the coach. And he's looking at it like, what am I looking at? And I said, did you get goosebumps? Not from being scared, but from the energy coming off this apparition. And he goes, yes, I did. I did. And he said, I was like shaking. It was so strong. And then suddenly the horse started, the coach followed, and it made a little left turn and then started up the little road that leads to what's called the gatehouse there at the bottom of the property. And he said, the light that came off this apparition was so bright, it lit up the park. And he said, if anybody had driven down Doheny Road, which is right there, right next to it, they would think they were filming or something. It was so bright. And it went up the hill and made a left turn and then vanished.
So would it be accurate to say that there is possibly more activity actually on the grounds and inside the mansion itself?
No, there's activity on the grounds for sure. And black shadows that are horrifying. And a woman on the grounds who was a security guard was there one night at the 905 gate, we call it, off of Loma Vista Drive. And she had to stay here. Her job was to stay there at that gate, make sure nobody came in. There was filming equipment. It was locked and closed. So she stood there and she starts to hear like clopping on the cement and the asphalt. She's like, what is that? And it was like after midnight. And she said, coming around the corner, coming down the hill toward her, was a white and gray, gorgeous looking horse with a Mexican on in the saddle with a huge sombrero slowly coming toward her, but the sombrero was covering his eyes. She couldn't see his face. And he was riding toward her, and she's like, what am I looking at? And it came halfway down the hill and stopped. And now here she is by herself at night, staring at this apparition of a Hispanic guy on a horse. And it just looked at her and eventually just went, move the horse off the right, off the street, into the dirt and the hill that's there. She had a flashlight that she turned on, and when she ran up, as it started going down the hill, and she ran up to the top of the hill and pointed the flashlight up, the flashlight went out. It went around the corner, and then the flashlight came back on.
It's a fascinating story. It's just one of many more in Cleet Keith's book, Ghosts of Greystone Beverly Hills. On Into the Paranormal, Dead Air continues. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Want to listen to Into the Paranormal without the ads and support the show? Subscribe to our commercial-free podcast for just $4 a month at paranormalradio.com.
What you believe might not be. Step into the zone of the best unknown. UFOs, aliens, ghosts, Bigfoot. Conspiracies and cover-ups. Into the paranormal we go.
The freaks come out at night on Into the Paranormal, where vampires are highly encouraged. Dead air.
On this All Hallows Eve weekend, it's Into the Paranormal, Dead Air. 855-790-8255, toll-free in North America, 503-506-0396, outside North America, and on Skype at ITP51. I must tell you, before we run out of time and I forget, 3 hours at a special time next weekend on FM News 101 KXL, midnight Pacific, officially 2 a.m. Eastern. And then you just have to do the math everywhere else. Why 2 a.m. Eastern? Well, because they will have already rolled back the clock 1 hour. And then it's just very confusing. I had to do like brain surgery to figure out what time it would be for the guest on the East Coast to join us. But needless to say, midnight Pacific is the time of the show next week. And we're live in Portland, Vancouver, from FM News 101 KXL at midnight for 3 hours as we roll back the clock. We have invited folks to call in to the program tonight and to share their stories with, you know, geared towards haunted and spooky, since that's what everybody's in the mood for here on this Halloween weekend. And Brian in Arkansas is one of those people who actually called into the spook line earlier in the week. So I've heard this story. You're going to want to hear it right now.
Hey, Jeremy. This is Brian and Priscilla. And we wanted to call and give you one of our stories. This is probably the scariest thing that ever happened to me. So here we go. That was an apartment we lived in some years ago where we had experienced a number of events. The most terrifying one occurred around this time of the year. We had inadvertently fallen asleep on our reclining love seat. We were both sleeping rather soundly when I awoke to something running up my legs towards my face. As I looked, I see this dark brown furry humanoid. It was about a foot and a half tall. The scary part was it had a mouth full of teeth, and it appeared to be heading up to try and chew my face off. The creature had its arms outstretched, and I instinctively just threw my hands up to try and stop the rushing attack. I grabbed him around his neck and shoulder area and pushed with everything I had. He was extremely strong for his stature, and I could feel my strength giving way. I apparently was making sounds as this was occurring, which woke Priscilla up. She yelled my name, and the creature released me and vanished into thin air. Now, what Priscilla informed me of after this, she stated that she saw me and I was straining every muscle against something that appeared to be pushing back. She didn't see what it was, but she could tell that there was actually something there pushing on me. Not knowing what to do, she simply yelled my name. Now, I didn't get out of this unscathed, however. The creature had left 3 large scratch marks on the top of my right thigh. And these were actually bleeding. So whatever it was, it marked me. I was very uncomfortable sleeping for a while, and I would like to say I wished I would like to actually say that after that we just left the lights on, but unfortunately the lights were on when this occurred. So on a good note, we ended up buying a new house, which is where we live today, and we bought this house and moved just a few months after that happened. So there you go.
How about that? In an entity that was full of teeth and was running up your legs, going for your face, and you thought it was going to chew your face off in the middle of the night while you're sleeping and you're most vulnerable. Well, I don't expect every one of those stories that we hear tonight or tomorrow night on All Hallows Eve will be quite like that. You are encouraged to call us, whether live or on the spook line, after you've had a chance to digest what you've heard tonight on the program, because we do have another 2.5 hours for you tomorrow night. There are many paranormal hotspots across the country and across the world. We, of course, have heard about some of them tonight. Every state, though, no matter where you go, has its spooky paranormal locations. And in the book Passport to the Paranormal, Your Guide to Haunted Spots in America, written by Rich Newman, he's got more than 200 stories of hotels and restaurants and bars and museums and other haunted spaces that, you can actually visit for yourself in all 50 states. It explores the nature of each location's activity and provides historical details along with photos that help bring the stories alive. These active locations are operating businesses where I mentioned you can experience the haunts and apparitions there. Rich is the author of 7 books, including the Ghost Hunter's Field Guide and Ghost Hunting for Beginners. He's made appearances on television programs and nightly talk shows, has traveled to haunted places, And, of course, the book that we're going to be talking about tonight with him, Passport to the Paranormal, Your Guide to Haunted Spots in America, talks about many of these haunted places, more than 200 of them, in fact, which would mean that there probably are haunted locations. And welcome to the program, Rich, in each of the however many states we have in this country.
For sure. We definitely have haunted spots, at least two or three in each state that's in the book, yeah.
And so are there some favorites to you? Now, you come to us from Tennessee, just outside Memphis. So have you investigated some of the haunted sites around Memphis, Tennessee? I'm sure that's probably a yes. So can you tell us about those?
Oh, sure. Well, here in Memphis, like, we have a couple of pretty famous haunted spots. The Orpheum Theater has the famous story of Mary, who is the spirit of a little girl who they believe was killed or struck by a streetcar outside on Beale Street. And then they took her inside as she was dying and she passed away. And now she's seen so much in the Orpheum Theater that they actually have a seat that they keep open just for her. It's just reserved for her for shows. And then we have a really cool place on a little street that we call Victorian Village, Adams Avenue, called the Woodruff Fontaine House that you can tour. That's a Victorian home, really cool in itself, but has a really cool story about Molly Woodruff, who passed away in the house, and she has a bedroom named for her where she haunts and that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really great places. Being in Memphis and close to the old haunted South, I mean, I'm close to all that good stuff in Arkansas, Mississippi, everywhere. So it's a good location.
Do you go to these places specifically because you heard stories of them being haunted?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I totally started doing all this just as a pure ghost enthusiast, like wanting to go out, you know, watching shows like Sightings and Unexplained Mysteries, and just wanting to go out and see some of this stuff for myself. So I was already going to places like the Crescent Hotel in Arkansas and Limp Mansion in St. Louis and places like that before I even thought of writing the first book.
Have you had experiences yourself while you've been investigating these locations, or was it an experience that drew you to investigate these locations?
A little bit of both. I mean, I had a house that I lived in when I was a kid that the closet door in my bedroom would open by itself every night. And it was a weird event because you could stare at the door and wait for it to happen and it wouldn't do it. But the second that you would go to bed, you'd actually hear the door handle and then the door, you know, open up. And they did it every single night. And I used to have friends spend the night so they could see it happen and stuff like that. So that, I think that kind of intrigued me to like go out and check out haunted places around and stuff like that. But for sure, when I got into more of the, like the Crescent Hotels and Limp Mansions and stuff like that, that I started thinking that I really wanted to sit down and write, you know, a paranormal book. So, yeah, a little bit of both.
Any of those locations that you've had one of those experiences that you just never want to experience again, Rich?
You know, I think when I first started, I would get kind of spooked out and kind of have those thoughts. But I've done this now long enough that there has to be just the right context. And by that, I mean just be totally unexpected. I'm in the dark by myself. I'm totally not expecting something to happen for me to even get creeped out anymore. Now when things happen, I actually get excited. I'm like, oh man, something's happening. You know, like I'm not going to sit in the dark for 5 hours doing EVPs and not experience anything tonight. And the last couple of years, I've actually been working with Japanese folks from Fuji TV. And we've been traveling all over the country and shooting episodes for one of their paranormal shows. And we've had great luck getting stuff on camera and watching their reactions when something scary happens. That's when you see people who freak out. They take the paranormal very seriously.
That's rare, though, that you go into a location and you literally can get things to happen, not on command, but at least with some sort of frequency, because many people would sit there all night and have nothing happen to them.
Yeah, I think the first step to any successful ghost hunt is choosing your spot wisely. I mean, so many like beginning ghost hunting groups and stuff like that, they see a place and they say, "Ooh, that place looks spooky and weird and there's nobody there. I bet it's haunted." And then they go in there trying to investigate. And you're probably not going to have great luck. Or they go down to the local cemetery or something like that. I always tell people, and this is how I ended up working with Fuji TV, that, I mean, if you're wanting to go somewhere and set up cameras and capture something spooky on camera, then you really need to concentrate on going to places that kind of have a high probability of that happening. And where there's been a lot of eyewitness accounts, like the Crescent Hotel, where we did have something great happen on camera with Fuji TV.
Okay, remind the audience who's just tuning in at this moment where the Crescent Hotel is, and is there some history that precedes it?
Okay, the Crescent Hotel is actually in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, and it's a really well-known haunted hotel, especially in the ghost hunting community, because it appeared on the show Ghost Hunters about, gosh, now probably 10 years ago, and it just became super popular after that. But basically, in the early 1900s, this doctor, Doc Baker, pretended to have a cure for cancer, and they would bring all these poor, sick people into what's now this hotel, tell them they're going to cure them. They'd, of course, die, and they'd sneak the bodies out during the night. And just hundreds died there from this fake treatment. And eventually, he actually got caught by all things mail fraud, because he was doing mailers to get people to come to do his fake cancer cure. And they threw him in prison, and then they put a hotel in later. And now it's got all these great hot spots in there because of this terrible stuff that happened there.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's what happens sometimes. So tell us about some of the other locations that you write about. Maybe pick your favorite from a handful of states here, because, I mean, you've got all 50 states covered in your book.
Oh, yeah. Well, the very first book that I wrote for Llewellyn was called The Ghost Hunter's Field Guide. And I took the same approach to that book, but I had over 1,100 locations in that one. And because of that, I could only put, about a paragraph about yay big on each spot. And when this kind of this 10th anniversary kind of came around of that book, and Llewellyn was like, we should probably do kind of an updated version of it. I thought, instead of doing 1,100 places again that I'll never get to go to personally, I would rather whittle that down to like the best 200, do more information on each location, and include a bunch of my personal stuff, from all these trips. So yes, I do have a lot of favorites and stuff like that. And, I think I just actually mentioned the Limp Mansion. I grew up in St. Louis, so that's near and dear to my heart. It's pretty famous haunted bed and breakfast. I think most of the ghost shows have been there at some point. But the gist of it is this family was had a lot of money in the early 1900s from making Limp beer, which would later become Falstaff, and then later bought out by Grisadick Brewing, I think it was. They ended up going broke in Prohibition. Three members of the family committed suicide right there in the mansion. A fourth died outside the mansion of strange circumstances. They think she may have been murdered. Now you can stay there like a bed and breakfast, and the actual suites where they would have lived and worked. And it's just this really cool, once again, kind of Victorian snapshot of a house that this Limp family, lived in. And you see apparitions there. We shot there with Fuji TV again, and we actually caught on camera this guy sleeping in bed, and his door to his room opened up, and this glowing ball of light just floats in through the door and hovers at the end of the bed. Not an orb. I always have to point that out to the ghost hunters out there. This wasn't dust or a bug on camera, but an actual physical ball of light floating through the air, and got it all on camera. And I mean, kind of, I'd say Limp Mansion, Crescent Hotel, the Stanley Hotel, Shanley Hotel in New York. Those are some of my favorites.
What's your thoughts on orbs, Rich? I mean, there's a lot of controversy, and that's good controversy, because not everybody can agree on what we think they are, because I don't think anybody knows for certain what they are. But what's your thought on that?
Well, I mean, there's most definitely, and people kind of use orb used to be kind of caught as kind of a catch-all for a lot of different stuff that was happening on still photos and video. But I think you can really parse that stuff out now, where now that nomenclature is usually used for things that aren't paranormal now. Whenever I hear people say orbs, they caught on there, they usually mean like they got a ball of dust that was floating across the room, or there was a bug in, that was on there and it looks like an orb floating across the room. Then there's actual ghost lights, which are more like a physical glowing ball of light that you would see in the room even without a camera, glowing and floating in front of you. And we also have sprite lights, which is more like an occurrence that looks like almost like sparkler type lights. And they usually end up being kind of close to the ceiling in rooms. A lot of people will walk into a room and feel kind of a static charge and then see these little twinkly lights kind of up towards the ceiling. And we've kind of started calling those sprite lights. Well, I absolutely have seen sprite lights and ghost lights and gotten orbs, you know, on photos and videos that were dust and things like that. So I think it's just more of like, you know, parsing the nomenclature of stuff that it is about debating it, which ones are paranormal or not. I think most ghost hunters know.
Do you assume that maybe some of these could be an indication of, say, some sort of energy that is present at a location?
Oh, for sure. When we see ghost lights or sprite lights, we kind of know something's going on. They're usually pretty, like I say, Limp Mansion is known for three different spirits that all committed suicide there, and possibly the fourth, the Lavender Lady. They even have a room named for her, which I recommend, the Lavender Suite, probably the best room in the house. And we saw the ghost light there. And a ghost light, a lot of people just believe the ghost light's just another form of the soul, you know, maybe not enough energy to form a full apparition. So it's just seems more compact, like a ball of light. Some think that it's more when you see, especially outside, ghost lights, that they're more like kind of like a will-o'-the-wisp, kind of like a Native American spirit kind of legend or something like that, or a forest spirit. Mm-hmm. Could be. But as far as I know, that's I definitely think that they're usually supernatural, though. I don't always buy into the whole ball lightning swamp gas thing.
So if somebody's interested in kind of ruling out some of these possibilities or trying to investigate a property that they believe might be haunted, you wrote a book about, you know, ghost hunting for beginners, because, you know, experienced ghost hunters don't usually rely on books to hone their craft. People who are interested in getting involved in this would. So can you give us some tips for those of us who haven't investigated haunted properties? Maybe how we should do it, how we shouldn't do it, and the things we should bring with us?
I always tell people, first and foremost, to not worry so much about the gear. Because I think a lot of ghost hunters and people who just kind of want to get into ghost hunting and the paranormal get kind of caught up with the gear stuff, like wanting to go buy infrared cameras, wanting to go buy a bunch of audio recorders and stuff like that. The truth of the matter is, I mean, you can go stay in a haunted room, especially nowadays, go and get you a room at, you know, the Crescent, the Stanley, anywhere, and use your cell phone for ghost hunting. It has a great audio recorder on it. It has a great camera on it. And you could pretty much get by with that. If you were going to get a single piece of gear, I would suggest maybe an EMF detector, because it's kind of great getting that that little bit of a secondary device, giving you kind of a clue something's happening. But really, like, trust your senses. You know, a lot of people go and they want to have fun, which is a good thing. But realize the more that you're chatting and having fun with your friends, the more you're polluting your audio, the more you're polluting your video. And it's going to be harder to tell if you've got a real EVP if you guys have been cracking jokes and whispering and things over the top of each other, you know, all night long. But I would just say stick to the basics and not worry about gear so much.
Fantastic. We will continue our dead air. My guest, Rich Newman, at this point in time, but of course you can join us at any point along the way. Stop on, hop off wherever you would like. It's a passport to the paranormal, your guide to haunted spots in America. We'll continue into the paranormal on Dead Air. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Parabnormal News. I'm Brad Bernards. Signs of a planet transiting a star outside of the Milky Way galaxy may have been detected for the first time. This intriguing result using NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory opens up a new window to search for exoplanets at greater distances than ever before, according to NASA.gov.
They used a technique looking for the temporary dimming of X-rays from an object with NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory. This intriguing result could open up a new window for exploring exoplanets. That is, planets outside our solar system.
The possible exoplanet candidate is located in the spiral galaxy Messier 51, also called the Whirlpool Galaxy because of its distinctive profile. Exoplanets are defined as planets outside of our solar system. A group of researchers wants to save Earth from a potential asteroid apocalypse using a new planetary defense method called PI, short for Pulverize It, according to reporting in LiveScience.com. The plan, detailed in a lengthy technical paper on the University of California, Santa Barbara Experimental Cosmology Group website and submitted to the journal Advances in Space Research, aims to smash large, potentially life-threatening asteroids into hundreds of tiny pieces by launching an array of penetrator rods into the asteroid's path. These rods, each measuring about 6 to 10 feet long, could contain explosives, potentially even nuclear ones, to blast an approaching asteroid into relatively harmless bits long before it reaches Earth's atmosphere, the researchers wrote. Somewhere between abnormal and paranormal, I'm Brad Bernards, Parabnormal News.
Your step. Hide under your blankets. Whatever you do, prepare yourself for what's coming through your speakers into the Parabnormal Dead Air.
It's the thing we usually only get to do once a year, but this year it's twice a year on this Halloween weekend. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. Join us then. And, of course, for our 3 hours next weekend, Saturday at midnight, from FM News 101 KXL Studios in downtown Portland, live at midnight next Saturday as we roll back the clocks. My guest is Rich Newman. Rich has been doing these ghost investigations. He obviously knows what to do, what not to do, and really it's not necessarily the equipment that you need. People are through... Their abilities, they can sense these sorts of things around them. Can you sense these spirits? Do you work with people who can, Rich?
I'm not actually, no, I don't have any kind of psychic ability or sensitive or anything like that. I'm sad to say I don't. I don't know anybody with that special gift. Although I have been around people, I always tell people that they should trust their instinct because a lot of time, even without psychic ability, you just have that. Sometimes you get like an electric feeling on your skin and whatnot to let you know something's there. You can also have people who are sensitive to electromagnetic fields. And so a lot of times they'll almost feel kind of nauseous when they're around, especially pretty powerful activity. I don't have the... I don't have the personal friends that have a psychic or anything like that. So, but I think it'd be fun to do it.
Those sites that you investigate, do you have a favorite ones? Maybe it's what kind of established it is, or the history behind it.
I've always said, like, I always think the best hauntings are the places that have a lot of really good history. Being where I am, usually if a place is haunted, it's probably associated with the Civil War in some part. In fact, I did a whole book on ghosts of the Civil War. So when you get around here, a lot of the antebellum homes, they usually have kind of a history of people who were either killed in the war, or the house was used as a field hospital or headquarters or something like that. Usually if they're still standing since the 1860s, they probably have some sort of significance. So those stories are always interesting to me because this was one of the areas that was pretty divided in the Civil War. Tennessee, while pretty much did go straight Confederate pretty quick, Missouri was neutral and close by. Kentucky tried to stay neutral. That was close by. And of course, we've got the great battlefield of Shiloh close by here, too. So, I like a lot of places that have a lot of good history. That history really helps you to buy into the ghost story a little bit more, too, I think.
Yeah, exactly, because the history behind it might also indicate why some of those events are still happening and why they continue to happen with sort of like residual hauntings and that sort of thing.
Oh, for sure. And also kind of lets you know who might be haunting. So, I mean, you know, like there's a really great place here in Bolivar, Tennessee that was used as a makeshift headquarters before the Battle of Shiloh. And Generals Sherman, Grant, and McPherson actually stayed there for about 3 days. And it's haunted by a woman that we're pretty sure was probably the woman of the house during that period. And she was so belabored by the fact that these enemy generals were using the home as their headquarters. That was exacerbated when her husband, who was serving for the Confederate Army, was killed. So we're pretty sure, you know, that she's haunting the place. And when you have that history and you can match it up with the activity that's happening, it can go a long ways with figuring out, you know, who's haunting a place too.
What's it like balancing, common sense paranormal investigation with the world of Hollywood when it comes to putting this stuff on the TV?
Well, and it's not just Hollywood. It's all television. You know, even like working with the Japanese folks. When you work with producers, you know, they want things to happen. You know, like they're producing entertainment. And if that show is not entertaining, well, by God, it better get entertaining. I'd say you have a lot more. You know, I feel pressure when I take the Japanese. I always suggest the places we're going to go to, and not always things happen there. And when it's a dead night and there's nothing happening, I feel that pressure of like, oh crap, you know, like we're sitting here filming all this and nothing's happening. But they have this great aesthetic in that, you know, their shows are fun, so they just get funny. Like when nothing's happening, there's all the antics of what's happening in the room with the person staying in the haunted room, and they just make everything funny. And with American TV especially, it seems like the philosophy is more of, if something's not happening, you know, we need to kind of insinuate that maybe it is, you know, like maybe we're hearing sounds off camera or something's happening and that sort of thing. And I don't know, it's sort of expected. I think even the ghost hunting community has, you know, takes a large grain of salt when they're watching those shows, you know.
Among the locations, any out here in my neck of the woods here in the Pacific Northwest?
Oh, are you kidding me? You got some great stuff up there. I mean, I love all the hotels and stuff that's owned by McMenamins.
Oh, there you go.
Man, all those, every single one of those, especially there's one called McMenamins Lodge. That one I really, really dig a lot. Like, it's almost like a stay, you know, all in one, like resort with ghosts all over the place. I mean, there's so many ghost stories and things happening in those, and they're so good at like scoping out those locations. But I was just up in Oregon, I think last year, right before all this, pandemic crap started, and we went to Wolf Creek Inn, and that was really cool spot because that was like Jack London had stayed there and wrote part of his books and things and whatnot. That's really close to Rogue River, and I had never been up in that area and just loved it. But Wolf Creek Inn has got some really cool stories about the ghosts and stuff on the property, and then you get the bonus of a vampire thing that lives out in the woods. So people that stay at Wolf Creek Inn say they've seen this red-eyed vampire creature that's stalking the woods all around that particular old inn. So you can get a little bit of crypto fun in there, too, along with your ghost sign.
Have you ever seen those eyes looking back at you, Rich?
I'd like to see the red eyes of a vampire looking back at me, from the safety of being inside, of course. I've definitely seen a couple apparitions. I've seen half of a torso from the waist up with a head and kind of open eyes and mouth in Magnolia Manor, a B&B that's here in Tennessee. And then everyone in the room was pointing at it and going, right there, there's an apparition appearing. And you could see almost like a bald head and holes where the eyes would be and kind of an open mouth kind of like this. And then it just winked out. So, I mean, it was, you know, it was like it ran out of juice. It was like it was forming and then it just fell apart. And then we were also hunting at a place called the Walking Horse Inn. And we came around a corner right in front of a full-blown apparition of a woman in a long gown and dress, which startled my partner to the point that he dropped his $1,000 camera and it shattered.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
The story you were telling us at the beginning, some folks were intrigued by that, and they wanted to know what that was like, to literally go through the events that you hinted at earlier, you know, as a teenager. You said it may not have happened at the same time each night, but it never failed to occur. What was that like?
You know, it was scary at first. Like when you're a kid, because I think that particular house I lived in, I probably was around 12 when I moved in, and I lived there until I went to college. So at least I wasn't a little kid. But I had little sisters who didn't sleep in that particular room. But this house was like about a 1925 area house. I had a really cool, had those doors that hide in the wall that you can close to separate the parlor and things like that. And we never really got the story of who the family was that was there before us or who would have lived there originally. But the closet in the room that I slept in was this long, narrow thing, like it was used for storage maybe at some point. And the door was very, you know, firm closing, normal door. When you close it, there was a click of a latch and that sort of thing. So when it opened, it was really obvious. Like you would hear the actual handle, and then you'd hear that click of that thing coming, the latch coming off, and then the door would just swing open. And I would have my friend spend a night, and we would sit and we'd watch it, or we'd try to coax it, you know, like, hey, open the door, do it, open the door. And it was like it was intelligent enough that it wouldn't do it if you were watching, or it wouldn't do it if you asked for it. But, you know, we'd be like, all right. And then we'd go to bed. And as soon as you got in bed and got the covers up, and it was just, and I got used to it. Believe it or not, it's amazing what you can get used to when you live in a haunted place, I guess.
Yeah, you can tolerate a little bit more than the other, because if I was the friend, I can just say I'm not going to come back over to Rich's house. But if you're the child who actually lives through that, you're just hoping that maybe there are some nights that are calmer than others and you might have friends left at the end of that visit in which to invite back over, right?
Yeah, well, I think the weirdest thing about that particular place was that nothing else happened. Like you would think, you know, something else would happen. Like maybe you'd hear footsteps, you know, a few nights kind of thing, or maybe there would be like a voice now and then or something, or something else would move, you know, but never saw or heard another single thing there. Although I will say this, if you're aware of the idea of sleep paralysis, myself and friends who would come over experienced sleep paralysis there though. Or we would wake up in the night sometimes in that room and you would feel like there was like some kind of presence in the room with you and you were paralyzed in your sleep, which was pretty startling.
Yeah. Did you find that was a common occurrence or did that happen in more than one location?
I've never really had that happen except there. I never had sleep paralysis anywhere else. And I love the documentary. I think it's called The Nightmare. that's about this phenomenon, and I recommend it for anyone who, especially if you're experiencing it. But I'm not 100% convinced that sometimes that sleep paralysis isn't a side effect of having an entity in the house, that sometimes it is actually sort of acting upon us. There's definite proof that sometimes it's not that it is sleep paralysis and we're half asleep, half awake, and it causes these crazy brain waves to trick us into thinking we're having a horrible experience. But I think sometimes it's also because there's a ghost in the house and it's affecting you. Because I've never experienced that sleep paralysis anywhere but that particular place, and I know 100% that room was haunted. So,
and you think that there was some sort of correlation between the two?
I do in my case. Now, I mean, like I say, when I watched the movie The Nightmare, there are definitely people there who just, they're suffering from sleep paralysis. But there were some pretty compelling stories in there, and that I've ran into in my life. There were people that were in houses with a lot of activity happening, and sleep paralysis was just one of the symptoms of all the things that was happening to them.
Wrapping up here with Rich Newman, author of Passport to the Paranormal, is there any place left on your bucket list to go and investigate, Rich?
I definitely want to go to more overseas haunts. I've only gotten to go to a few places in Europe, a haunted prison in England, and we did a haunted school in Ireland. I'm very interested in Japanese ghosts and ghost stories. So I would actually like to go somewhere like Japan and really work with what, you know, they had these very unique ideas of what ghosts are, and very specific ghosts, you know, that ride on your back and all this other kinds of stuff. And I would just like to really go and explore all the various folklore and ghost styles in Asia.
Very interesting. I appreciate you coming on the program tonight, Rich, and sharing some of your stories with us and giving some of the audience some insight about where they might head if they want to have one of these encounters themselves.
I'd say pick up my book and look up your state, and I pretty much did the legwork for you, because everything in there is going to be, like you mentioned, a place you can go to. I even put suggestions as far as which rooms to ask for when you go to the hotels, if you really want to, you know, be up and close and personal with a ghost. And good luck. Just pay attention and don't get caught up on the gear.
They actually have logs. Speaking of the McMenamins property, in which Rich spoke about, I have stayed at two or three of them, and most of them have logs where you can actually sign when you checked in, when you checked out, what room you were in. And you can document whether or not you had any activity with ghosts or whatnot. And you can also check it out to see what others have experienced who have stayed in that room previous to you as well. So that's one of those locations at the McMenamins properties where you can do exactly that. We will continue on Dead Air tonight on this All Hallows Eve weekend. Into the next half hour to talk with you. So get ready to dial me up at 855-790-8255, toll free in North America. That's 855-790-TALK. Outside North America, 503-506-0396. And on Skype, it is ITP51. And we do have more stories from you, the Into the Paranormal listeners, on Dead Air.
When the lights go down, the strange comes out. Into the Parabnormal. Dead Air.
On what seemed to be a wonderful summer evening in August of this year, a furious yet quite disturbed entity lurking around the grounds of a government building in Armenia, Colombia, wanted to come out and play. While the building was being watched over by security, the not-so-friendly energy presence found its way inside and aggressively attacked one of the guards for no apparent reason. The apparition violently threw the security guard into the wall. And then, as the man was trying to crawl away, the angry spirit forcefully continued tugging on the official until two of his co-workers arrived to help the guard get away. When they arrived, the angry entity hastily vanished into thin air. Upon the rescue, the security officer appeared to be dazed and disoriented, unsure of what had just occurred. While the whole incident was caught on a security camera, which then appeared on Facebook, Mayor Morales of Armenia then watched the video and informed the public that even though the government building hallways were clearly haunted, we need not worry. He then stated that he had enlisted a special team of religious ghostbusters of sorts to help get rid of the violent spirit. The mayor then added, he wants everyone to have peace of mind because we will be in the presence of a bishop and other religious leaders, and they will bring God's blessing to every corner of that government workplace. We are strong and ask for respect and a union in prayer to keep our peace and tranquility. And most of all, we are protected by the hand of the Lord, so this demonic entity will not win and regain power over us. Whatever the skeptics say, parts of the South American nation seem to remain undoubtedly haunted to this very day. This is Daniel Brewer, Into the Parabnormal, Dead Air.
No matter the building, no matter the place, no matter the time of day or night, I think that those haunted stories are certainly more common than one cares to admit. It's Dead Air tonight, and we want to hear your stories. Let's go back to the phones, and here is Jen in Minnesota. Hi, Jen.
Hi. Happy Halloween, by the way.
Oh,
and I wanted to tell
you,
you had a very wonderful story or a wonderful show today, I would say. I'm going to tell you these stories because I'm not going to be here tomorrow because I do have three little ones I have to take out Halloweening. So, the story is in 2016, I bought a house and I didn't know the history of the house at all. And it could have been because, you know, I have ghosts that have followed me since I've been little, maybe, but I don't know. But this was the freakiest that I've ever had. Okay, so we get into this house, we move in and everything like that, me and Daniel and the kids, and a lot of freaky stuff start happening. First, doors start opening and slamming at night. Okay, here we think it's maybe the wind because the windows, Dan likes to sleep with the windows open. Okay. Then the lights start flickering. Here we thought maybe it was just because it's the old house. Then we start hearing voices. Well, everyone wondering what's going on. Then one of the kids don't want to sleep upstairs in their room because in the closet, there's an old attic space, a crawl space, you know, and it's open. And one of the kids kept saying that they would see shadows at night coming out of the closet. So we're like, okay, so we move the kids into another room across the way, shut the door, and they were in there. Okay, so then at night, that door would keep opening. So we put a board against the door. Well, that night, or the next night, we heard a big bang, went up there, and the board was falling down. And we're like, whoa, what's going on here? So then we put the board back up again, and the next night, we heard a horrible scream, and we didn't know what it was. And we went into the kids' room. The board was still up and everything. We went into the kids' room, and my daughter has three scratches, big, huge scratches on her arm. And I didn't know what the heck was going on. The next night, she woke up, came down the stairs, and told me that chicken feet. And we're like, chicken feet? What are you talking about? Chicken feet told her to come down the stairs and hurt us. And it happened for about a week straight. And we took videos of it and everything. We went back to the videos and we took a look at the videos, and her eyes were like pitch black. I immediately called my realtor and asked what I could do to sell this house, because clearly this house was haunted and we had to get out. So yeah, that was the scariest right there. And I did not want to stay in that house any longer.
You did get out. And how did that go for you? Did you ever have any of these occurrences after the fact?
But we had later found out that a woman had died in that house. So we think that it was the woman that didn't want us in that house. But we don't know for sure.
Well, she got her
wish. My daughter keeps saying that Chicken Feet still is telling her to do things, like almost like she's possessed, but she's not, you know, and everything. I keep telling her Chicken Feet is not here anymore. Chicken Feet's not going to hurt you anymore. And my daughter is now 10 years old. So, yeah, that was freaky.
Well, at least you made it out.
And then the other story.
You made it out alive.
Yeah, yeah. That was a very evil spirit. I don't know if it was an actual spirit, or if it was a demonic entity that just wanted us out and just wanted their house. Do you know what I mean? But Daniel was telling me one time I was with my parents, and I had the kids with my parents, and he heard the kids crying and screaming upstairs, and he was going halfway up the stairs. And then he realized the kids were not home, and he slowly backed down the stairs. Yeah. So, yeah, there was clearly a lot of activity going on in that house.
Wow.
And then the second story I have real quick is Halloween night. I was 13 years old, and I went with two of my friends to this Sale Asylum. And it was an old Sale Asylum. It was all run down and everything, but it was a place where they had the mental, and it had like tuberculosis people and stuff like that. Well, we walk in and there's two wheelchairs, and they weren't moving or anything like that. We walked right past them. We went into this one room, and there was equipment that was kind of stood over like the bed and everything, the old bed, and it started turning on. And as we turned around, our name started getting written on the wall, and my friend's name was written in red. So we instantly got out of that room. As we were going out of the room, one of the wheelchairs started moving. Well, my friend thought it was funny to sit in one of the wheelchairs. She sat in one of the wheelchairs, and she could not get out of that wheelchair for 5 minutes. It's like she was literally stuck in that wheelchair. Then we heard moans and screams. And after she got out of that wheelchair, we got out of there.
Almost a little bit of a paralysis thing there as well. Frozen in the wheelchair.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So those are the two freaky stories that I have. I have many more stories, as you know, but those are the two I'm going to share with you. And I'm going to say have a wonderful Halloween. I hope you have a good show tomorrow. I will definitely go back and look at it.
All right, appreciate that, Jen. That's Jen in Minnesota. As they say, when we pass, there are certain places where we may end up. Many people may not understand the difference between those two terminologies, graveyard and cemetery. We all would probably just assume that those are places where people go when they pass, and maybe not venture a further thought. I found this interesting piece that I actually posted up on the social media earlier in the week. And they define a graveyard as a place that is resting on church grounds where someone is buried. A cemetery is a more modern location, which would be a burial ground separate from the church. And so when you think of graveyard, you would think of burial ground on a church ground. When you think cemetery, you would think a place where folks are buried, generally away from place of worship, right? A little interesting tidbit here for Halloween that you may not have known about before. I hope you'll come back with us tomorrow night, friends, because we'll be right back here on Halloween night, and we've got another three fine guests who will be joining us, and that will be at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern on All Hallows Eve. I'm Jeremy Scott from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. Good night, all.